Theatre in Gananoque. Come rock out with MC Shansky, Gananoque's poet laureates Gretchen Huntley, and listen and dance to some great rocking grooves by Pudge, The Red Handed, and my band Triple J, all in support of the Gananoque and Area Food Bank. Advance tickets are available now for $20 through Eventbrite or by emailing me at ganspringrock@gmail.com. You can also help by buying one of our incredible Gan Rocks 2026 t-shirts and participating in our fundraising auction on Facebook, featuring wonderful gifts from local businesses, all in support of a great cause. So, take a look on Facebook for Gan Rocks, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at Ganspring Rock 2026 on April the 25th.
Good morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home, Real Talk on Real Estate. My name is Sherry Doherty and I have the honor of being your host every Monday morning at 10 a.m. First and foremost, I hope everyone enjoyed a lovely long weekend. And I'm excited today because I have a new friend and a guest in studio with me. His name is Ayush, and I wanted to mention how I met him because it's actually interesting and makes me actually admire him even more. I may have mentioned previously that I am a member of Downtown Kingston Toastmasters, and if anyone is interested in public speaking, I highly recommend a Toastmasters club. Ayush visited my Toastmasters club recently because he's a member of the St. Lawrence College Toastmasters club, and he was getting ready for a pitch competition for a new business that he is starting, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But he came to our club so he could practice his presentation. That made me right away have a ton of respect for him because, number one, a young person who also belongs to Toastmasters is phenomenal because I know, Ayush, that you're interested in personal development. And second of all, to go outside to a separate club to get feedback on something means you care a lot about it and that you have the wherewithal and the fortitude to do so, considering that the club that I belong to meets at 7 o'clock in the morning. So all that said, welcome to the studio today, Ayush.
Thank you so much, Sari, for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Excellent. I'm really excited to dive in. Two things, I guess. Let's start with you, as I mentioned, belong to the Toastmasters Club at St. Lawrence College. How long have you been a member there?
I have been there for 1.5 years now.
Okay, good for you. And what made you decide to join Toastmasters?
So I'm an international student, and for me, communication is everything. So one day I went to one of my professors and I told him that I lack communication, I lack self-confidence, and he suggested me you should go to the Toastmasters. And that's how I started going to Toastmasters, improving myself. I met my mentor there, and that's how all started.
Okay, and so you feel like it is helping?
It is absolutely helping. It completely changed who am I today. And yeah, it's been a great experience for me so far.
That's amazing. And look at you. Today you're here on the radio live.
Yeah, absolutely.
No pressure. Not here to make you feel nervous at all. What we're here to talk about today, though, is Pinpoint. And I'm going to let you explain exactly what Pinpoint is, but obviously you're hardworking and ambitious and you have great ideas. So you, I believe, and some friends identified a need in our market and in your community, and you wanted to find a way to help solve that. Can you explain to people what Pinpoint is?
So basically Pinpoint is a centralized housing platform for students, specifically built for students. So right now, if you see, you have, if, especially if you are a student, you have got two different housing options. One is Facebook and Kijiji. They have tons of students listings, but listings are not verified. They are unreliable. Navigating inside the application is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Fake listings, scams. Yep. We all are familiar with that, right?
100%.
And for a student specifically, it's very difficult. But on the other side, there are some verified platform also, like apartment.com, so Realtor, Jumper, but they have very limited student housing.
Yeah, that's correct.
Rent averaging around $1,300. And as a student, it's a bit more expensive for me.
Right.
So Pinpoint sits right between that line.
Okay.
So we are providing one centralized housing platform for students. We provide verification, help you find roommates. And for a landlord specifically, we will provide a beautiful dashboard with all the essential tools they need. And we handle verification, which specifically makes the work of landlord much more easier. So we are basically a distribution layer for student housing in Kingston.
Oh, wow. Well, good for you and thank you. I'm sure the students appreciate that. I have lots of questions. Obviously, I'm in real estate and I do leasing opportunities often. Not specifically specializing in student housing because it is very unique and a lot of times moves very quickly. So I'm very curious because I agree with you and I talk all the time about being so, so careful about Kijiji or about Facebook Marketplace. I've had, I'm going to say less luck, I guess it is, with Kijiji. So any experience that I've had with Kijiji has not been great. I'm very careful about what I advertise there. And I do it because properties need exposure and all eyes are good eyes on a property when it's trying to be sold. But I'm very careful about inquiries that come from Kijiji. And I cannot say that I've had a successful actual transaction take place that the lead was a Kijiji lead. Mm-hmm. So just be careful, folks. You're 100% right that you need to be careful. How would you go about verifying that person then? So say it was somebody who expressed interest on Kijiji. How do you go through the verification process?
So our verification process is not just one process. There are different types of verification we are thinking of applying in our app. The first verification is if the landlord wants to put their listings on our site.
Yep.
We use something called third-party verification.
So you're now verifying the landlord.
Yeah, we're verifying the landlord as well.
There are scams there as well.
Absolutely.
Somebody tried to rent out one of my houses I had for sale once.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they go on Kijiji or they go on Realtor, they skim your listing, they reskin it as a lease listing, and then they try and collect rent on your house. It happened to me. I had to make a police report.
Yeah, and it happens a lot of time. Even there is one story of a friend of mine. It was his first time in Canada and in Kingston specifically. And he was standing outside his apartment holding like two suitcases in hand. And he saw someone coming out of the apartment. Later he knew that the listing was fake.
Oh no.
And the deposit is gone. And the important thing is there is no one to take the responsibility.
Right.
Right. And you cannot even blame the landlord because landlord also don't have a very specific platform to manage all the listings, all the messages. Oftentimes, as a student, if I message landlords, I have to wait hours or sometimes even days just for a reply or just to see what's available. And we are living in 21st century and housing is our basic necessity.
Yep.
And it's very unreliable just to depend on luck to find housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we are filling that gap and trying to solve that problem.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. And then for the landlord, then, how do you verify tenants for them?
Oh, yeah. For tenants, also, a verifying process is pretty simple. It's the pretty much same process as landlords. We verify through the student IDs.
You
simply log in with your email, and it's a very simple verification process, which means, and we verify documents as well. So the landlord don't have to ask for all those essential documents.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen in housing market those private documents get exploited, right?
Yep.
And we are solving those breaches as well. So we are operating everything within the app and we are making the process very smooth from listing to searching to finding roommates. So everything in one place.
Okay. And will you address subleases as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because that drove me crazy. I'm going to be honest, as a parent, that I was paying for my child's rooming from essentially, I guess, May through August when she wasn't there. But in order to keep the place, we had to continue to pay it. And so that, you know, just makes you a little bit nutty. My daughter went to university in St. Catharines, so we knew we had somewhere to stay in St. Catharines, I guess, if we went for a visit. But it did make you a little bit crazy. So now that I know about subletting, could I go back? I would have subletted that property out for that time.
Yeah, we do have one specific place for sublease as well. As soon as you go inside the app, you will see various tags, subleases, pinpoint listing, partners listing. Mm-hmm. So you can access to various type of listings and every listing is very affordable, verified. And regarding verification, our in-app algorithm checks for any suspicious activities.
Okay.
If there is any, it will flag it and notify the developers and we will take care of that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So this is an app today. Can I also access it on my laptop?
Yes, so our beta version is already live.
Okay.
But we are planning to deploy it live, our first very polished version, by the end of this month.
Oh, congratulations. That's very exciting.
Thank you so much. And we already have posters all over St. Lawrence College.
Great.
Because we really wanted to get the real user feedback on what they think about our app. Is it easy to navigate or not? And so far, the experience has been, and the feedback has been really positive.
Okay. So if I'm a property owner, how do I get my listing on Pinpoint?
So you simply go to the Pinpoint, and then after you verify yourself, and you just put your listings. As soon as you verify yourself, you will get one dashboard where you can manage your calendars. You can select a specific time slot for where you want the tenant to come and viewing, which means the messaging overhead is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few others in-app facilities like AI help support. Anything you don't know about the application, our AI will help you navigate through the app.
Wow.
So those are some of the major features.
Okay. So are you pulling listings from the other places that you mentioned, like Realtor or apartment.com or anything like that? Or this is, I kind of separately have to go and put my listing on Pinpoint?
We are thinking of partnering with the property management companies as well, like SM Properties, Homestead. Because when you start a company or when you start building something, there is always a chicken and egg problem, which comes first,
oh,
right?
Oh, of course.
And housing market itself, we need both listings, plus tenants, landlords to work everything smoothly.
Right.
So the centralized idea of our app is to allow landlords to post on our site as well as we get listings from other sources as well.
Mm-hmm.
So students have a lot of options.
Okay. So is the beta period primarily focused on St. Lawrence? Or are you, you know, bringing it to the Queen students or bringing it to the RMC students or anywhere else as well?
Yeah, we are bringing it to the Queen students as well. So we are four people developing this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you next. Who's the team? So tell me about the team of brilliant young minds that's developing this.
So me and my co-founders, who we met during Queen's Hackathon, we were exploring the ideas, and we had one question that was the number one problem in Kingston, right?
Okay.
And it was housing. And all of us had some frustrating experience with housing, whether it's finding housing, listings, or fake listings or scams. So we dug deeper into the problem, and we found out that there is one real gap. And that's how we started Pinpoint. And two of us is from Kingston.
Okay.
One is Queen's University. I'm from St. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them from Toronto.
Okay.
One is studying at Seneca Polytech.
Okay.
Another is at Ontario Tech University.
Yep.
So we bring perspective from different places because they have their own perspective of how housing operates in Toronto, right, in different places. And housing is very diverse. And the solution that may work here in Kingston may not work in Toronto, right?
Right.
So we have the ideas from different places, and that's really benefiting us.
That's really brilliant, for sure. And who's bringing the technology? Because you have to be incredibly smart to be able to develop this platform and an app. And so is one of you a specialist in that?
So fortunately, four of us are the computer science student.
Okay, all of you.
Yeah, all of us. And me personally, I'm more interested towards the distribution, talking to people, you know, pitching our ideas, doing more research. So I guess I involved very less in the development.
Okay.
Three of my other co-founders, they are more focused towards development.
Okay.
I'm more focused towards marketing, talking to people, and just pitching our ideas.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing a great job getting the word out there. That's fantastic.
So
you should be proud of yourself. And I guess the nuts and bolts of everything, though, is who's funding this?
Right now, there is no funding for us. We are using our own money.
Okay.
And within the application, we are trying to make it scalable, which means if this works in Kingston, we want to expand it to other cities as well.
Sure.
And as we start getting traffic, yeah, we absolutely need funding. That's why our next plan is to, we're also planning to apply for the Kingston Development Program.
Good. I was going to suggest it if you hadn't.
Yeah.
There's so many funding opportunities, and Kingston's a fantastic town to support people in that way. Anything through KEDCO you should look into, and then even the Ontario grants. There's lots of opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's our next plan. And hopefully we will get some initial funding to keep running our app. But Yeah, that's our initial plan for now.
Okay. And I'm always impressed by anybody who will do this. And so you said you've been at St. Lawrence for how many years?
It's 3 years now.
3 years. Okay, so you're graduating this year.
Yes.
And what are you doing after graduation?
After the graduation, my plan is to keep working on Pinpoint as much as possible, because the student housing problem is very severe and no one seems to working on it. People are just ignoring, and once they get scammed or they find fake listing, then they realize that
right.
It's a real problem.
That
right?
It's a problem.
And as a human being, we want to solve people's problem. We want to do something for the society. And that's what we want to do specifically for these students. We want to build platforms, and in next 2 years, we're hoping that when students or newcomers talk about housing, that Pinpoint will be their first choice.
Okay, that's wonderful. Now, if you don't mind me asking your personal story, mm-hmm. when you first came to Kingston, how did you find your first housing? And did you have a good experience or a bad experience? And in, I guess, the 3 years that you've been living here, have you lived in the same place or have you moved around? And what has your personal experience been like?
Honestly, it was pretty difficult for me, because when I came here, I was 17 years old.
Oh, young. Okay.
I have no relatives here. No one from my family. So I talked to some people which I knew through social media.
Okay.
And I was sleeping in sofa for like 10 days, because the rental periods generally starts from September. I came here in August.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I found one sublease, and it was pretty cheap and a bit fishy as well. And later I realized someone been taking commission sitting between me and landlord.
Right.
And that's one of the that's one of the difficult thing with the sublease as well. You never know, because there is no official verification process.
Right.
You just communicate with someone, and sometimes you don't even sign the lease. It's just like a mouth-to-mouth thing.
Don't do that. That's terrifying.
That's terrifying. Yeah.
I'm telling everyone who's in listening shot of this, do not do that. Please sign a lease.
Yeah, and
you need all the protections in place.
Absolutely. And specifically for newcomers, they don't have idea how the leasing works, right?
Right.
And it was a problem for me as well. And there was a lot of misinformation as well, that it's very difficult to find the housing. And we know that housing market is getting more and more traffic, specifically in Kingston as a developing city, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you search correctly, there are high chances you'll find housing. It's just because housing are like scattered across multiple platforms.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so far, I have lived in like 3 or 4 different places.
Okay.
And finding housing is extremely difficult. You message someone in Kijiji Facebook, it takes hours sometimes, days to get reply. You have to verify that viewing, then you are not even guaranteed that you will sign the lease or not.
Right, the whole application process.
Yeah, it's so.
I was curious when you said that you were new here, because I know on the leases that I've worked on, we've been very stringent about, you know, getting a credit check and an employment check and seeing identification and seeing like all sorts of validation of the person. But when you're new here, you don't necessarily have that. So you don't have a Canadian credit record or a Canadian employment record. How do they validate that in that case?
Honestly, there were no such verification as that. That's why it was very suspicious for me.
Right.
I gave them my my personal ID.
Okay. So a driver's license, passport,
yeah,
something
absolutely.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. And I was also very new to those rental things, because back in my country, the process looks very different from here.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And there was no one for me to give the validated informations.
Okay.
And I just gave them my personal ID, and the sublease was done. I was living there. Rent was cheap. But later I realized it is something you should not do.
Well, right there. So I feel like your mother, because you're just telling us you're 17.
Yeah.
So you're a baby in my mind. You're 17 years old. You're in a new country. You, prior to living here, did you live at home with your family?
Yes.
Okay. So you're living on your own for the first time in a strange country with no family.
Yes.
Wow. The fact that you're standing, good for you that you survived all that, because I probably would have ran home scared, but good for you. That just, to me also, like, I'm so worried about identity theft. Because the minute somebody asks for your driver's license or your passport, and then particularly like add a social insurance number, they can steal your identity. And I'm sure it happens.
Absolutely. And that's also one of the problems we're solving with the Pinpoint.
Right.
We are doing all those verification in app. We will not store those verification.
Right.
All the documents. And we are making that process seamless as well. So there is no identity theft, no scams, no fake listings.
Right. Okay.
So it's a bunch of problems we are solving at once.
That's great. I assume that if I upload a document then to Pinpoint, it's secured there.
So we don't.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we use something called Stripe Identity. It's a world famous software specifically for the identity stories and everything. So you just go into our app, you click verify, then our app will redirect you to those Stripe thing.
Okay.
And the Stripe just send us like whether the person is verified or not. So okay. We don't store personal document on our database.
Okay, great. That I would also give advice to our listeners is be very, very careful how you send your identification. So even for my purposes, I have to get ID before I help someone purchase a home or before I list a home for sale. And people will text me their driver's license or email me their driver's license. Sometimes banking information, sometimes credit card information, and I don't want it because that is so ripe for someone then, you know, breaking into your email system and finding a credit card information or a driver's license and stealing identity. So you have to be so careful about that. But I don't think at 17 you would know that. If somebody asked you to text them your passport, you probably did it.
Absolutely, no.
Right?
I used to get afraid when I used to talk in front of like native peoples because the language was new to me, right? New country and everything was new. So I was already scared and the housing thing was even more scary and unreliable.
New words, bigger dollars attached to it, things
Absolutely.
Like that. So are you just in the process of developing your English? Because it's fantastic.
So far, after I joined Toastmaster, I really started improving in terms of communication, my pronunciation, vocabulary, and I started talking to more people.
I'm really impressed. What language were you raised in?
So in Nepal, we speak both English and Nepali.
Okay.
Nepali is my primary language. English is my secondary.
Okay.
So I was familiar with English, but speaking and being familiar is two different things.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. I'm a little familiar with French, but I certainly can't speak it, and I certainly can't hold even this conversation in it. I was born and raised in this supposed bilingual country. So good for you. You should be very proud of everything that you're accomplishing. I had one other question. So right now, for student housing, what on average does it cost to rent a room?
If you go to the verified sites like Jumper, apartment.com. From our research, in the verified platforms, the average rent is $1,200 to $1,300. So me as a student, it's...
Did you say $1,200 to $1,300 for a room?
Yeah.
And how many people would be in that house? Because that's a room, and even if it was a four-bedroom house, that's four people.
Yeah.
But I think they put more than that in a lot of them.
Yeah, they absolutely put more than that, right? We all are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And... in the verified platforms, they provide verification, but as a student, I need shared listing, right?
Yeah.
Because I need some. I cannot afford like the whole apartment, and they have very limited resources for the students there. And as we come back to the Facebook KJZ, we already know the condition of that.
Right.
So that's the problem. But yeah, it's pretty cheap in the Facebook and KJZ. The average rent is $675.
$675.
That's why the traffic is very huge, and the scammers. Fake listings, those things are in very high amount.
Right. And assuming the $675 is valid, does that include anything? Or do you also have to pay for your internet, your utilities, and maybe your parking on top of that?
So utilities, that's a really nice question. Utilities
You're welcome.
Internet is not included.
Okay. And so you have to also budget for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you go there, sometimes you see like $500 rent, $550 rent. So you're like, oh, wow, this is so cheap. And
yeah, red flag.
You go inside the description, then it has like so many other things, right? Extra for parking, then after utilities extra. And recently I was just going through some other listings and in the heading they put $500 as the listing, as the rent. And once you go through the description, it is like $750.
Right, you have to add the plus, plus, pluses,
yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, this is another problem. It's more of a transparency problem, right?
Yeah.
You're desperate, you want to get home for you as soon as possible. And you go to the Facebook KZZ and you see this type of things. So.
Well, right there, that should just be a red flag. If something seems too good to be true, it probably is. And I hate to sound cynical because I'm not a cynic in life. But in that particular case, that just says to me, red flag. I see the same thing in housing listings. There's some people are doing a thing right now where they're like auctioning houses. So sometimes people will put a listing, like say a $500,000 house on the market for $2. And so I have clients that say, well, I want that. Really, it's about they're holding a bidding date. They're essentially auctioning it. And there's going to be a minimum price that they're going to sell it off for that's somewhere in the disclosure. But if you see that, like for sure, alarm bells should be going off that yeah. Something funky is probably going on here. So living kind of in similar type worlds.
Yeah.
Just a little bit also because I have you and because you're young. And I know that you have an interest in the housing market, whether or not it is rental, providing student housing. I know that you also said you were speaking to myself and you've been speaking to another realtor lately. What's your perception? I guess two ways I would ask you your perception, A, as a young person, but B, as a newcomer to Canada, about the state of housing in Canada and whether or not you have aspirations and believe that the dream of homeownership is achievable any longer.
So as I said before, housing is really diverse in Canada, depending on the city. In some cities, it's very easier to find housing.
Right.
In other cities, it's extremely difficult. For example, in cities like Toronto, it's such a headache and nightmare to find housing there, right? For a newcomer, if you have really good information and really good resources of where you can find housing, then, and if there is platforms like Pinpoint,
right.
Sorry to advertise it.
Oh, do it. That's what you're here for. We gave you 30 minutes to talk about it.
Yeah, then it gives you really good idea of how to find housing.
Yes.
But unfortunately, there is no such thing here in Canada specifically. Regarding the housing itself, mm-hmm. Everyone wants to buy a house, right? Everyone wants family. But right now, the young people, they want to explore the world. They don't want to settle in one place. But my view towards housing specifically is, yes, I want my own house with my family. It's a dream.
Right.
More towards the city like Kingston, which is very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
But for the young people right now, I think the view is more towards they want to explore the world. They are constantly switching places.
Yep.
They just want to settle in one apartment and just work their way through it.
Yeah, that's true. I do find that the younger generation is very much about experiences and much more mobile than, say, my generation was. We, you know, took a very straight, defined path, my husband and I. You know, we graduated school, we got careers, we bought a house, we lived in the first one for 7 years, we lived in the second one for 10 years, we live in our current one now for 16 years, I think it is. We have no plans to move. That seems to, you know, that's, we put our roots down and that's where we stay. And I do know even my children have moved more times than I have in my entire lifetime already, whether it was places in between school or whether or not it was just moving, different experiences, different roommates and whatnot. But they're also very open to exploring different places to make their home. And so it's just a different mindset. So tell me, I guess, if we were here interviewing next year, what your hopes would be for what you've accomplished with Pinpoint and then how people can find you and find Pinpoint.
Well, that's a really good question. So with the Pinpoint, we are not just building an app. We are building a trusted housing platform for students.
I love that. Great language.
We are building one community and we are making Kingston simpler, safer, and trusted for students.
That's fantastic.
So next year, our plan is to onboard most of the landlords who are forced to put their listings in KZZ, Facebook, on our site, provide them verification, save them a lot of time. And hopefully when you are in next year, if you ask some students or newcomers that where you find housing, their first recommendation will be Pinpoint.
Oh, wonderful. And you mentioned a couple of times that you have a mentor through Toastmasters.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to mentor other people? Like you're so, imagine you 3 years ago, and I'm sure there's another you now coming. Would you be willing to mentor that person and kind of give them your insights and wisdom?
Absolutely. I'm kind of person who always loves to help other person because as a young people, we knew what we go through, right? And yeah, if anyone wants to connect with me, sorry, I missed that question.
Give your contact information.
You can go to the LinkedIn. You can find all of our, me and my co-founders, then in LinkedIn. By the end of this month, we will have our official version ready, and we are planning to open the social media thing from our Pinpoint, where we will upload all of our updates, what we've been working on, our progress, and yeah, you can follow our journey there.
Wonderful. Well, I will absolutely be following you along. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And to you and to all of our listeners, I hope you have a wonderful day finding your way home.
I think a lot of trans girls I know feel like butterflies because we've come out as this new beautiful thing. But in the same way, like, you have to kind of break down first before you can like emerge as this new beautiful thing. So there was a lot of difficult moments along the way.
Danny Hoshino writes and performs music as Lightbird.
You had a good day, girl, so why are you crying on the train home from Manhattan?
This is a story called Among the Blobs. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. India's parliament strips trans people of rights, the Maddow Nose and Don't Hide Pierce in the Rainbow Rewind, and Hoshino transitions gender and music to Lightbird. Those stories and more now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Nico Raquel.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 28th, 2026.
India's parliament is stripping transgender people of the hard-earned fundamental rights established by a 2014 Supreme Court ruling. The new law completely upends how trans people are legally recognized. It narrows the definition of transgender, excluding people without official gender dysphoria diagnoses and those outside the four traditionally defined sociocultural identities. Trans men and non-binary people are effectively erased. Currently, citizens can apply for a certificate to legally identify as trans, allowing them to update their gender on official documents and apply for government welfare programs. With this amendment, their applications will be reviewed by a screening committee. Queer activists warn that this could be used to deny gender-affirming care.
This bill essentially rolls back legislation that declared transgender people as a third official gender and affirmed their fundamental rights would be protected under India's constitution. Associate Director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch, Jayshree Bajoria, believes the bill will put transgender people at risk and criminalize their existence by introducing legal punishments for coercing or alluring people to be transgender. Trans woman and activist Ukai Budmashali expressed her sorrow on Instagram.
I'm so disappointed. I resist, I fight against, I will not accept this. This bill, this is against my people, this is against my community, this is against our beliefs, this is against our identity.
Transgender and intersex athletes are now officially banned from competing in women's events by the International Olympic Committee. All women athletes will be required to take a genetic test to prove they are biologically female. Last week, public outcry from a coalition of more than 100 sports and human rights advocacy groups called for the Olympics to stop its plans to resume so-called sex testing. The IOC banned those tests 30 years ago on the advice of experts and doctors who said that genetic sex tests were inaccurate, unreliable, and harmful to women. However, IOC President Kirsty Coventry claimed the opposite in a video introducing the policy on March 26th.
The policy that we have announced is based on science, and it has been led by medical experts with the best interests of athletes at its heart. At the Olympic Games, even the smallest margins can be the difference between victory and defeat. So it's absolutely clear that it would not be fair for biological males to compete in the female category.
In the nearly 3,000 years the Olympics have existed, only one openly trans woman has competed. New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard competed in the 2020 Summer Games. She placed seventh in her division.
Coventry said that athletes would only be required to undergo the invasive test once in their lifetime, and that the organization would offer counseling for those who request it. Chris Mojour is a competitive triathlete and duathlete who made history as the first transgender man to compete in the 2020 Olympic trials. He was on the front lines of advocating for a 2016 rule change that allowed trans athletes to compete in the games. He says the policy makes sports less safe for everyone.
So it's absolutely outrageous that the IOC would institute a ban on trans athletes under the guise of protecting fairness for women in sports, while simultaneously putting all women in harm's way by forcing them to do this genetic testing. Sports has already tried this before. The IOC has already tried this before, and it failed scientifically, and it failed ethically. If we really cared about fairness in women's sports, we wouldn't police people's bodies. We would build better sporting systems.
The international queer advocacy group ILGA says the policy fails women and girls. Their statement says, in part, any policy that invites scrutiny over certain women's bodies harms all women. And the harm extends beyond sports, legitimizing surveillance in schools, hospitals, workplaces, and every other sphere of life. IOC President Coventry said the policy will take effect for the 2028 Games in Los Angeles. U.S. President Donald Trump gave the credit to his so-called Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports executive order that penalizes organizations that don't follow his anti-trans position.
While the IOC and President Trump attempt to keep trans women out of competitive sports, the United Nations blocked a vote to define gender in biological terms. Earlier this month, at the annual UN Commission on the Status of Women, the U.S. was the only country to disagree. 37 countries voted against limiting gender to a binary, and 6 abstained. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said gender equality has always been a question of power.
Not a single step forward for women's rights has ever been given. It has been won.
Dominic Krause will become Munich, Germany's first openly gay mayor. He's also the city's first Green Party executive.
Vielen Dank, München, für dieses große Vertrauen. Ich fühle mich sehr geehrt. Vielen, vielen Dank. Und ich kann euch versprechen, und ich kann den Münchner...
The 35-year-old Krause has served on the Munich City Council for 12 years. He won 56.4% of the vote against the former Social Democratic Party mayor, Dietrich Reiter. Krause's victory ends 42 years of SPD rule in the city. Nepal is often recognized as one of the most LGBTQ-positive Asian countries, and voters proved it again on March 16th when they elected a transgender lawmaker to parliament for the first time. 37-year-old activist Bhumika Shrestha is a trans woman and the second openly queer elected official in the country's history.
Girl Guiding in the UK is forcing all trans members to leave the organization. Girl Guides are known as Girl Scouts in the U.S. It's the world's largest volunteer organization for young women. According to their website, there are nearly 400,000 members across the United Kingdom. Transgender members have until September 6th to withdraw. Trans volunteers will be allowed to stay, but only in roles that are open to all genders. The organization said the decision was made to comply with a 2025 Supreme Court ruling that declared that trans women are not women. Girl Guiding groups across the UK are protesting the policy. Guiders Against Trans Inclusion, an unaffiliated organization, released a PSA to reassure expelled Girl Guides.
We know you may be feeling angry, scared, and betrayed, and we are right there with you. This is going to have a devastating impact, and we are incredibly concerned that Girl Guiding are putting people's welfare at risk like this. We are going to keep fighting with you and fighting for you for as long as it takes. We will not back down until all girls and women are allowed back into Girl Guiding.
Space, the final frontier.
Finally, school is out at Starfleet Academy. CBS Studios and Paramount Plus pulled the plug on the latest addition to the Star Trek universe after two seasons. Critics of the Starfleet Academy accuse it of being too woke, but the franchise has never shied away from sensitive social issues. Television's first interracial kiss between William, Captain Kirk Shatner, and Black communications officer Nichelle Uhura Nichols during the third season of the original series caused pandemonium. There have been several LGBTQIA+ characters, and Starfleet Academy features the first gay Klingon. Black British lesbian actress Gina Yashiri, who plays lesbian cadet Master Laura Thok, said in an Instagram post that she's gutted by the cancellation, but retains her belief in the franchise.
The message of Gene Roddenberry is still so apt. Obviously, the world is still not ready to hear the message of love, peace, infinite diversity, acceptance, the eschewing of violence and senseless wars. We're not ready to hear that message yet, and hopefully one day we will be, and Star Trek will be back stronger than ever, and preferably with the same message and not completely whitewashed.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 28th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Ebony Joseph and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Nico Raquel. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Come on, Harry, we want to say goodnight to you.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This week, we honor the April birthdays of Rachel Maddow, David Hyde Pierce, and Samuel R. Chip Delaney.
Rachel Maddow is the first openly lesbian anchor to host a primetime news program in the United States. She's received multiple Emmy Awards for her broadcasting work and a Grammy Award for the audiobook version of her book Blowout. Maddow can be heard on her podcast and watched weekly on MS Now.
David Hyde Pierce is an American actor best known for his portrayal of psychiatrist Niles Crane on the NBC sitcom Frasier, for which he received 4 Emmy Awards, as well as 2 Screen Actor Guild Awards and 5 Golden Globe Award nominations. He won the Tony Award for Best Actor in a Musical for his role in the Broadway musical Curtains.
Samuel R. Chip Delaney is an award-winning American science fiction writer, memoirist, and critic, known for groundbreaking works like Dahlgren and Babel 17. Openly gay and African-American, Delaney has long explored themes of sexuality, identity, and society in his writing. A pioneer in bringing queer perspectives into speculative fiction, his work helped expand the boundaries of LGBTQ representation in literature. Here is Chip reading from his 1988 short story, Among the Blobs.
This is a story called Among the Blobs. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry. He swayed, one arm raised, torso stalled in the torque of its own turning. His name was Joe. To one side of his back was not a pain, nor even a feel, but rather a sensational ghost, an unformed blob.
Now let's rewind a few March key queer milestones. In April of 1974, the American Psychiatric Association removes sickness from its definition of homosexuality. In 2001, the Chinese Psychiatric Association removes homosexuality from the list of mental disorders.
In 1990, the Hate Crime Statistic Act was signed into law by President George Bush. It's the first United States bill to use the phrase sexual orientation. The first Dyke March was held in Washington, D.C. in 1993. The march was planned by the Lesbian Avengers, and more than 20,000 women participated.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Transgender Day of Visibility has a special meaning for the artist now known on stage as Lightbird. This March 31st, as trans people around the world are vying to be seen, Lightbird wants to be heard with the release of her new single. For the story behind the song, here's This Way Out's David Hunt.
Danny Hoshino writes and performs music as Lightbird. It's a new name for the veteran folk rock guitarist, marking a new and deeply personal chapter in Hoshino's life. A life that seemed to unravel 3 years ago, when Hoshino came out as a transgender woman.
You had a good day, girl, so why are you crying on the train home from Manhattan?
Today, her life is transformed. She's starting fresh in a new city, New York, working on new songs for a new album. And living, finally, she says, the life she was always meant to live. I'm David Hunt. I sat down with Danny Hoshino, Lightbird, just 2 weeks before the release of her newest single, a bittersweet ballad titled All Right. It's a duet with Brooklyn singer Rye Lotz that explores the broken promises and broken hearts of a romantic relationship at its end. The music crashes as Lightbird takes a deep dive into her conflicting emotions.
You don't need a reason to be mad at me. I'm asking.
The song, released on Transgender Day of Visibility, is true to life. In 2022, just 5 weeks before her wedding day, the singer realized that the life of a cisgender heterosexual man was, to say the least, not all right. She explains.
I think a lot of trans girls I know feel like butterflies because we've come out as this new beautiful thing. But in the same way, like, you have to kind of break down first before you can emerge as this new beautiful thing. So there was a lot of difficult moments along the way. I grew up in a suburb of Boston, Newton, Massachusetts. My mom's from that area. My dad grew up in San Francisco. His side of the family is Japanese American. My mom's side of the family is Eastern European Jewish. We're a close family, and I had really kind of assumed that I would always stay in the Boston area and was very much on the path. At the time that I did realize I was trans, I was living up in another suburb of Boston, had a 9-to-5 job, and was getting ready to get married. And then this lightning strike happened where I suddenly realized some of the things that I had been trying to understand about myself were this very deep thing about gender that I had just never considered until I was in my 30s. Weddings, especially heterosexual you know, traditional weddings are very gendered. Like, there's so many things about them that are like very specific to the gender roles in terms of what you're going to wear and what you're going to say and what, you know, how you're appearing in the wedding. And I think that was becoming increasingly difficult for me to like visualize myself there. My mom kept poking me and saying, you know, have you found a suit to wear for the wedding yet? And I would say like, you know, like, no, I just haven't, like, you haven't gotten that. But really what was happening was I was sitting at my computer and Googling men's wedding dress over and over, because like, I couldn't be okay with the idea of wearing a suit for some reason. And I was like, there must be something else I could wear that would make me feel, I don't know, right somehow. I think the most important thing for me was deciding early on, like, I need to have, like, this is an era of my life where I need to be having my own back first before anyone else's, because I won't make it through it if I don't. And I think the songs sing to that, and to the sometimes like sad realizations of what that comes along with. I think specific to All Right, that song to me is, you know, I wrote it about the end of my relationship after realizing I was trans. And it was a really, really good relationship. It was somebody I was, you know, getting ready to marry, and someone that I love very much. And, you know, sometimes life throws you a curveball and something big changes and good, great things happen as a result, but hard, sad things happen as a result too. And I think that's, that song in particular sort of examines the tension between those two things, that like, sometimes you can't have one without the other.
Well, I'm sad and I'm lonely, and I feel that I only smile and get through the day. But I'm telling you, my baby, three cups and maybe I feel never empty today. Oh,
it's probably cliche to say Lightbird is rising like a phoenix out of the ashes of her past life and loves. So let's just say her transition has touched nearly every aspect of herself, leading her in new directions creatively as much as geographically. The new album, likely due out in June 2026, is a case in point.
Yeah, so it's my first full-length album with this project, Lightbird. It's a collection of songs that most of which I wrote following my realization that I was trans and coming out as transgender, but some from before that time too. So I think the story of the album sort of like spans the time before, slightly before and after. So it's just kind of different parts of that journey to self-discovery and self-love and understanding.
Tell me about the name Lightbird. Where did that come from?
I have a song, it's one of the couple singles that I already have out that I had written years and years ago called Bird in the Dark. And as I was thinking about names, I think I was thinking about that song and sort of the imagery of like, I don't know, thinking of myself sort of like as previously sort of like a dark bird who was sort of like a little more reserved and meek and pulled back and not necessarily wanting to be in the spotlight, and now kind of entering into this period where I very much wanted to be in the spotlight and wanted to like celebrate myself and put myself out there. So kind of a bird stepping into the light.
It's hitting on the wind, it's skimming on the water, it's feeling again. The two little daughters squinting at the sun.
I've been a songwriter for a long time, and I've always, you know, drawn from that personal well for, you know, what I wanted to write about. But I do think that prior to all this, I just didn't really feel like I had a real perspective or a real like voice that I felt strongly about. And I think now being like, okay, I've really got something to sing about, has pushed me to make it that much more like honest and raw and exposed.
Are you surprised at your life?
Yeah, I'm super surprised at my life. A lot of days I kind of like look around at the people around me and like what my day-to-day is and just like still can't believe it. Most of all, when I look at myself in the mirror or in the little video here, it's like, I think even 3 years into transition, and most of the time I have this, you know, you have your kind of like inner vision of what you, how you are sort of manifesting physically out in the world. Even still, it's easy for that to kind of slip back and for me to feel more like I used to feel. So the mirror has been a huge, is always a huge tool for me to like actually see myself and be like, wow. Yeah, I remember one of the things my mom said to me in an early conversation after I came out, I was like, we were just so surprised because, you know, we just didn't expect this. And I was like, I didn't expect this. I'm equally surprised, like did not see this coming, but I'm so glad it came.
What's next?
I'm still a very small artist. So music being my livelihood is, you know, I'm not there. So there's a lot of other distractions and things that I need to work on to just, you know, continue to exist, especially in a city like New York. But I really want to push myself to like focus my collective life energy on creating stuff and putting it out there and just kind of like, so it feels like shouting into the void sometime, but even if it is, I'm just going to keep shouting because I feel like the worst thing that we could do right now is get quieter. So keep singing out.
Weeks from my wedding day, lying with my little bae, but I am taking flight at 33 because that boy found within me.
I'd like to thank Lightbird for sharing her music and her experiences for this program. Learn more about her music at lightbirdmusic.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Ebony Joseph is our news editor. News Wrap reporters were Michael LeBeau and Nicole Raquel. Brian DeShazer is news producer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced by and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced our feature. Archive material courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives. Harry Styles and Lightbird performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating their 50th year together and in memory of Greg Gordon for his decades of service to the LGBTQ community, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KPFT Houston, Texas, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
and I don't look so hot these days again.
Hey, this is Sam from Punk is Dead Radio. Tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. for everything from pop punk to proto punk to hardcore on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Greetings and a warm welcome to the Pantheon. I'm your host,